Hello and welcome back. My guest this week is the actress Laura Pulver. She is best known for playing Erin Watts in the spy drama Spooks. I'm reading from Wikipedia. Irene Adler, Sherlock's slightly crazy bit on the side in Sherlock. Very reductive reading there of her character. And she won the 2016 Olivier Award for Best Supporting Actress in Gypsy, which was one of the most outstanding things I'd ever seen, where she played Louise to Imelda Staunton's incredible Mama Rose. And in fact, and I don't think I ever told her this, but it was like my second date with my husband was going down to Chichester and watching it, which is kind of amazing. I actually met her on the second date with my husband. Anyway, so she's brilliant. She was recently in The City and The City, which we talk about, with David Morrissey, and she's been in lots of things, and she's properly brilliant and constantly working and a huge talent, but also a very nice, kind, open, considered, brilliant person. And she is married to Raza Jaffrey, who she mentions obviously quite a lot, who is again in lots of things. He's also in Spooks and Homeland and Code Black, where he plays a doctor. So yeah, that puts a face to a name. And she came in to talk to me, and the first thing she did, which no one has done before, which was hilarious, was there's a light curtain in the studio, and she sat down and then got up and then drew the curtain.
I was saying to Raza, to my husband before we came, he said, you know what you're going to do? He said, we're such private people, and you're going to get into a room with Soph, who you know and who's your mate, and you're going to get chatting.
And you're going to spill everything.
Pull the curtain. And
yeah, exactly. Yes, we pulled. Yeah, already the curtain's been pulled and we're really good. Yes, although I don't want to disappoint Raza. But I think actually the purpose of this is often to find the things that we all kind of experience and feel. And do you know what I mean? Actually, there haven't been any great secrets revealed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like no.
Often it's just going, oh, and I felt this.
Yeah,
and,
me
know,
too.
Yeah, everyone kind me of too, does that, yeah. You know? It's a bit like that, isn't
yeah.
it?
I nearly said to him, come along. Let's do it as a couple.
That'd be good. I'll get him on another time. And then we'll just cross-reference yeah. what you've said. A bit like a kind of parenting Mr. and Mrs.
Yeah. Oh, God. My memory's awful. He'd be like, don't you miss... Yeah.
Now, I don't think I've seen you since you've had your son. I think that's...
Probably not.
I think the last time I saw you was we had lunch, a lovely lunch, with only one baby at the time, which is mine.
And
you were pregnant.
I was pregnant, and you were newly pregnant with number two.
Yes.
Yes. Because you looked at me with like a kind of glazed look, and I said, what? And you were like,
Oh, no, because I felt bad. There were a few people that happened with where we're introducing our new baby, and then friends saying, actually, we're also pregnant. I felt like I was being a bit greedy, which I got over that very quickly, I can tell you. But I felt that I was kind of going, yeah, I am too. And I've got. It was a bit like that, which. I felt bad about it.
No, I saw more this kind of
holy shit.
Veil of how did this happen that one time?
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
It was a bit like that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm in awe of you. I really am.
I think that often means I don't know why you did.
No. No, only because I hate the term we fell pregnant. Isn't that not awful?
Yes, like, it's quite negative, isn't it?
Well, Roz always describes it like, oh, I fell, I tripped, and I ended up pregnant with
I fell on a
stone.
Cucumber patch, yeah.
I found out I was pregnant just before Aziz's first birthday.
Right.
And we'd been home for Christmas for probably 4 or 5 weeks. And we'd come back with this whole kind of rose-tinted glass view of that we were going to come home to London for Christmas and fires and all lovely, scrumptious food and family.
Mm-hmm.
And we came back and everyone was sick.
Yes.
Chest infections, stomach flus, like everyone across the generations, our friends' kids that we hadn't met yet, my in-laws, everything. And my son, who was 11 months old, caught all of it.
Oh, no.
So for the 4 or 5 weeks we were here, I'm not sure I probably got more than 2 or 3 hours sleep at most nights, but sometimes at a time. And I just remember also doing press or publicity for something in the final week, turning up with a sty that I'd never had a sty before. It was off, I think, for like it was our wedding anniversary. Yeah, it was our wedding anniversary just after Christmas. We went to see Follies at the National and I had caught the stomach flu.
Oh,
so I was sitting there literally like that, the whole performance, doubled over. And that night we'd had our first night away. And Raza said, oh, look at this wonderful room. We stayed like Dean Street Townhouse. And I was like, yeah, love you. Good night. And rolled over at like 10 p.m., woke up at 7 a.m. the next morning. Happy anniversary. And then we got home. And I went for my yearly checkup after having my son, and they said, you're pregnant. And I, for a second, I was like, huh?
No.
How? Sorry?
Yeah.
When?
Yeah.
Sadly miscarried at like 9.5 weeks. But for a second, I knew what your eyes
just like how
were telling me, because at that stage, I don't think Oz was even sleeping through the night. I think he was still up at like 4 or 5 in the morning, maybe.
Yeah.
So I was just thinking,
how? That happens for a really long time, doesn't it?
Yeah, I was just thinking, how? How do we make that happen?
Yeah.
Hello? I made a long car. I made a long car.
Are you comfortable talking a little bit about your miscarriage? Or
yeah, it's something I feel like I want to talk about on some level, because it wasn't until so my second pregnancy came as a bit of a surprise to us,
mm-hmm.
and then when I miscarried, it was, I think it's such an emotionally complex time, because you're just getting your head around being pregnant, and because we can now know much earlier mm-hmm. that we're mm-hmm. pregnant. I knew at, what, 5 weeks? Five mm-hmm. weeks pregnant? And we went to 9.5. So I, for a good month, I knew I was pregnant.
Yeah.
And also had a one-year-old, or nearly one-year-old. So even in that slight delirium of coming out of sleep-deprived first mm-hmm. year, I was trying to kind of navigate, what was that be? So do we need to buy a bigger car? Do we need a different
the
buggy? You know, all that stuff started to kind of occur to me. And weirdly, having been so healthy with my first pregnancy and felt so kind of good, this second pregnancy, I didn't feel good at all.
Right.
And I couldn't work out whether it's because I was coming from a place of already being sleep deprived and not great.
Mm-hmm.
Or whether it just, in hindsight, wasn't right.
Wasn't right, yeah.
Something
I
wouldn't know. So then, I miscarried naturally. Friends of mine have gone for their first kind of scan and seen no heartbeat or no placenta or whatever it is, and then had to DNC mm-hmm. or whatever it is. My body did it naturally.
Right.
Went to my gynecologist and she confirmed that there was no blood source, the placenta hadn't grown, and it was measuring probably about 7.5 weeks. So I'd miscarried a bit early on.
Yeah.
And my body had told me at 9.5 weeks. And she said, it was on a Friday, and she said, we can take you straight to the OR now and do a DNC, but your body seems to already...
What's a DNC?
I think it's where they wash you out. I've never had it done.
Right,
so they're making sure that everything's gone from it within inside the uterus.
Right.
She said, your body seems to be doing it naturally by itself. How do you feel? It will quicken the process if we take you to the OR and do it now, obviously. Yeah. And I was like, no, my body's doing it. And I feel like I need to let my body do it.
Yeah, yeah.
So she booked me in an appointment on Monday, and she said, okay, if
if you feel on Monday you still need the DNC, mm-hmm. come back. Mm-hmm. If not, we'll just cancel the appointment.
Yeah.
So she was very understanding. And my body did it all naturally. We met back Monday. She scanned me again. There was nothing in there.
Yeah.
And then seeing that there was nothing in there was that moment where she left the room and my husband gave me a hug and I felt like that five-year-old child again, just bawled, like the sadness of that loss just really, really hit me. And yet I hadn't felt like I'd fully got my head around even being pregnant again yet. And it was definitely, I had moments of anger a couple of weeks later. I remember even saying to my husband, I just want my baby back. I want my baby back. Yeah. And I knew on many levels, I didn't want an unhealthy being growing inside me. Of course, you know, I think it's probably 90%, 98% of miscarriages is that something genetically isn't quite right.
Yeah, yeah.
So, of course, that's not what I wanted. But I yearned for the idea of being a vehicle for life again.
Yeah,
I'd had such a wonderful experience that first time.
Yeah.
I just wanted that feeling back again. And this utter sadness, and yet I could feel that this little being had moved on. Like this, there was another nest that little spirit needed to go to, and it, for whatever reason, wasn't within me.
Yeah.
And I kind of sobbed and made peace with that kind of sadness. And then I couldn't wait to be pregnant again.
Right.
I had that feeling of, oh, now I can't wait to have number two.
So it was sort of like a doorway into thinking, actually, I'm now ready to...
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
To have number two. So we have been trying again for 18 months.
Right.
And about... Oh, gosh, very recently, 10 days ago, I peed on a stick and I was pregnant. And I was like, oh my gosh. I was in Budapest and going, I know I'm pregnant. I just know it. So I went to a pharmacy in Budapest. It's like, pregnancy test? And, you know, the instructions were in Hungarian. I'm using Google Translator just to make sure. I think I know what this is. Like, I think I know what this is. Peed on a stick, pregnant. Came home to Roz, I'm pregnant. All the symptoms, boobs killing me.
Yeah.
Very nauseous. And my stomach felt like it popped.
Yes.
In a way that it didn't in the first time.
It's because it's suddenly going, oh, yes, I remember this. I was huge for the second. Yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh. And just again felt that stillness.
So
and then Friday, I woke up in the morning. Went to the bathroom. No, I went. My son called me in, and he was having a problem fixing his train track for his Thomas the Tank Engine. And I bent down and I felt a feeling within me. And I said, "Just give me a second, son. I need the bathroom." Went to the bathroom, and my body was miscarrying. I was letting go of that pregnancy.
Oh,
and there was that moment of going, "Oh man, not again!" You know, there was definitely a feeling of that. And this time I'd only known for a week I was pregnant rather than 4.5 weeks.
Yeah.
But what kind of I felt the most was we'd waited 18 months to have that excited celebratory moment. And we had it. Of course we had it. But within a week it was gone.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't even so much that... I was angry. I wasn't angry because, again, I was like, my body's doing something. Something wasn't right.
Yeah.
But how do I explain it? Just not even frustration. I guess it was sadness, again, just in a different way.
Yeah.
It wasn't a loss. It was that something hadn't been fulfilled, I guess.
Yes.
Like a promise that we'd just heard about then wasn't fulfilled or didn't turn out to be what we had anticipated it being.
Yeah, I think that's what I've heard people talk about, is that feeling of you've created this life, and then the life doesn't. You still need to, even if you've only known about its existence for a week, you need to grieve that life, because that potential and that life still existed, even if it was just for a week. And that, that must be so.
And also, so much goes on. Like, for your boobs to go up a cup, for you not to be able to do your jeans up in a week, or, you know, or at 5.5, 6 weeks pregnant. You know, there's hormonally so much must be going on. As we know, so much is formed and yet maybe not formed this time that early stage. And it, once again, maybe this is naive, I can't wait for a healthy one.
It makes it more precious.
Oh my gosh. And then holding my son's hand, taking him wherever we were off to, going to the supermarket that day, I could feel his hand in a way that I remember feeling it very, very early on again. It was very present, what it felt like to have, thankfully, a healthy, precious, joyous little soul in our lives.
So,
yes,
what did you expect motherhood to be?
I wasn't one of those people who grew up imagining getting married and having children. I was, for whatever reasons.
I'm interested, why don't you think you were? Because I wasn't either, and I'm always trying to work out why that is.
My mum and dad weren't happily married, and they separated when I was like 10 or 11.
Mm-hmm.
And subsequently, I think through my mum's hurt, her view was marriage, well, it's a piece of paper. If you love each other, it doesn't really matter. It's just a piece of paper.
Yeah, that was my mum. Very similar. Carry on, yes.
And so I didn't hold marriage in the same regard as what I do now.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't probably value it in the same way as what I do now.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw how much my mum loved and cared for me and my sister. So I thought, well, it doesn't really matter whether, you know, married, not married, happily married.
Yeah.
Like I guess all of our needs were being met thanks to having an extraordinary mother.
Yeah.
And I found this joy and outlet in acting. From probably like early teens, I started doing National Youth Music Theatre when I was 13, did that till I went to drama school.
Mm-hmm.
From drama school, I was lucky enough just to get a job before I even graduated, and thankfully haven't stopped working. And so the nature of my job requires so much of my energy and my focus. I don't think I really allowed room to see or want for anything outside of it.
Yeah.
I was also in probably not the healthiest of relationships at the time. So that took up a lot of my energy as well. So children didn't really come on my radar. And then sadly that relationship broke down. And a few months later, I knew Roz already through a group of our friends in Los Angeles. And we kind of really slowly started dating across continents.
Mm-hmm.
And about, I don't know, 6 months in, dear friend of ours, Shelley Korn, had a baby, and we went to Primrose Hill to have lunch with them and meet this baby. And Roz wouldn't let go of the baby throughout brunch. And I was like, can I hold him? And he's like, no, I'm having a really lovely time. and I knew that I wanted to have children with this man.
Yeah.
I didn't tell him this, but weirdly, months before we even started dating, I did a meditation course down in Brighton, which was really life-changing for me. And over this weekend, we did numerous meditations, and it was in this group of five people. And the last meditation I had was an unguided meditation. We were just all sitting together, and I had this
vision of dancing through Central Park and swinging around the lamppost like Singing in the Rain. Mm-hmm. And Raza was swinging around this lamppost with me. Now, I hadn't seen Raza for years. He'd been one of my many friends and acquaintances that I'd met when I went out to Los Angeles, yeah. Out of the 25 Brits that I ended up hanging out with.
Yeah.
And then as we sat down on this bench in this meditation, as I sat down on this bench, as they do in Singing in the Rain, my bottom hit a gurney and I was handed a child, and Raza was like on my shoulder and I was handed a son.
Oh my God.
And I remember coming out of this meditation, still gives me goosebumps. I remember coming out of this meditation and we'd often, you know, the leader would ask if we wanted to share anything. And he looked at me and he said, "Is there anything you want to share?" And I said, "No, I think I'm processing this one, and it feels too almost precious to share."
Yeah.
And probably about a week later, I remember saying to one of my girlfriends, "I think I'm meant to go to New York and meet Raza Jaffrey."
Oh my God.
And she was like, "No, no, you're 3 months out of a relationship. You're in the middle of going through a divorce. You know, I'm protecting you. No, this is, God love you, Laurie, it's not happening."
Yeah.
And I was like, "You're absolutely right. This is crazy. Meditation course in Brighton, you know, craziness." And probably a week or so later, I got a call saying, "Can you come and test for this TV series? They want you to go to New York to meet these producers." And I was like, and I left it probably a week before I called Raz and said, "I'm coming to New York to test on this TV series, you know, and if you're out there and, you know, you're still there," because he was filming Smash at the time. I felt like such a goofball. I was like, "You know, if you're still out there and you, like, fancy meeting for, like, a drink or something, then I think that would be really nice, you know?" And he thought, "What a loon." I think I even went as far to say, because we were on the phone for quite a while, because he was asking me, you know, where was I going to stay, and what was the project that I was auditioning for, and I was like, "You're such a nice person. Gosh, if you ever want to ask me out on a date in the future, I would just love that."
Yeah.
And I was met with silence. And I was like, "Oh my God, I'm really sorry if I've stepped over a line." And he was like, no, I'm flattered. I just don't date actresses."
Oh, wow.
And I was slightly offended and also slightly
he's an
bewildered.
Actor. Come on.
He'd had a bad experience with, you know, previous. Yeah. And I was like, "Okay, I get it. Anyway, let's just..."
Yeah.
Very long story short, gone out to New York, and I was rehearsing a play in Chichester. So I'd go out maybe like every other weekend, and we would just have like really magical weekends in New York together. Mm-hmm. And then, like I say, 6 months he was holding this baby, and I was like, "Oh, I think I want to have your children." And he was like, "Whoa, Tiger." Whoa. And for very good reason, and I'm glad he did. But that was the first time as a woman I'd gone, "Oh, I want to procreate. I want to..."
But it's so healthy, that, as well, because that came from the person rather than just the abstract thing of having children. And I wonder whether, in a way, similarly, my parents split up when I was quite young, so the kind of bubble burst of any idea I may have had of, like, "Yeah, then you get married and you have to..." Because I remember just thinking, well, you can't guarantee that's going to go well. Mm. And actually, I think maybe that's quite good to have that in your head. I think it made me healthily cynical about some things, perhaps. But also having the, you know, it all comes... There's so many parallels, I think, between our experiences. Mm. But to have a time in your life where you've had... the end of a really significant relationship is traumatic. Mm-hmm. You have that, it almost comes with it a kind of like a sense of clarity
and a space for growth.
Yeah, yeah.
It's almost like the lens gets clearer through if you kind of allow yourself to sit in the uncomfortable pain and the grief of what you're going through.
Yeah.
This clarity kind of
exactly
appears.
If you use it well, actually, yes, you can really move so much further. And it's obviously this, it's funny because we talk quite a bit about, you know, the point as a woman that you know you want children.
Mm-hmm.
And
And obviously it changed for everyone. And then there's this, you know, slightly annoying phrase of, oh, that's when my clock started ticking or whatever. I don't really think it's that. Mm. But I do think it is, I mean, often it follows some kind of trauma in some way of just not always, but you know, there's a thing of, you know, I decided I wanted to have children after my mum died. It was suddenly going, oh yeah, actually, let's just forget all this. This is what I want a family,
right?
And you know, and that was sort of suddenly very clear,
right?
Really crystal clear. And therefore the man, I was gonna say men, because I didn't, this was, you know, very, David was the first person I met who fell into that category of just like, this is a man I want to have a family with.
Right.
You know, I'm looking for someone, a really good man who's going to be really good to me and my children, and we're going to have a great, lovely life together.
Mm. It's funny also, I feel like who you attract is a direct reflection of where you're at.
Exactly.
And there were probably more than one moment. There was that moment where Roz was holding our friend's child. But there was other times as well. I was doing a TV series and I was working out. There was a trainer on the job, which was amazing. Mm. There was a nutritionist and, you know, we were all so fit and they were measuring this and body fat and da-da-da. And I was just the leanest, most fittest I'd ever been. And there was something really wonderful about achieving that. And I remember going to pick up this barbell one day and every part of my innards just went, put it down. Like, I don't want this. My body just didn't want it anymore.
Yeah.
And I'd been someone who'd been athletic my entire life.
Yeah.
Sporty and then a bit of dance. And just every show I'd done is like a marathon. And it was, my whole body was like, put it down. And then interestingly, when I was doing Gypsy with Imelda at the Savoy, Imelda said to me, do you want to have a family? You know, we'd have lovely conversations. And she was is such an extraordinary woman. She hasn't passed. And I said, oh, definitely. She went, how old are you? And I was thinking, 34, 35. I can't remember what I was at the time. She went, well, you better get on with it. And I was like, yeah. Thinking, but it hadn't, that whole ticking clock thing really hadn't entered my head. And at that point, my husband and I were working on different continents. And he would joke and say, well, I can reach, but I can't reach that far. And Gypsy had just been asked to be extended. And because we were working on different continents, I hadn't seen Roz for like 6 weeks. And this moment of perspective just came to me of, I'd been offered another wonderful TV show that was going to shoot straight away in Ireland, something for ITV, a film. And I think it was just something Imelda said that resonated, that I thought, I need to go home. Yeah. I need to go home. And it was kind of scary for me to be saying no to work and to be making space in my life for something else.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was so loud in my being that this is what I kind of needed to go and do. And that shutting it up with accepting another job just wasn't going to work, and that I didn't want to be 90 in a rocking chair going, oh yeah, well, when I was in Ireland shooting that TV series to no one.
Yeah.
I wanted to be on that rocking chair with my children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren around me with those stories and moments to recall and talk about. And that doesn't negate how much I enjoy my job or how much I honour what I do. There was just, there was something louder going on at that time.
Yeah.
And so I went home, and another girlfriend who I'd known for years, I was on the phone to her quite upset because I'd been home for 3 months and I still wasn't pregnant. And I think I'd assumed that, I've scheduled this.
Yeah, sure.
I've taken time off.
Yeah.
This is what's going to happen. Hello, universe.
Yeah.
And she said to me, are you still kind of going to the gym and stuff? And I said, yeah. I said, but I'm not really working out from ovulation onwards. And honestly, I think I heard myself as well, just, What am I saying? And she said, do you honestly think if you're working your body to fatigue 3 or 4 times a week, you're giving your body the signal that you that this is going to be a lovely, comfortable home for a being? Come be here. She was like, go and buy the kind of most mumsy swimsuit you can find and either go for a walk or go for a swim when you get the urge to go to the gym.
Yeah.
She went, I get that those endorphins and the oxygen in the blood are just what you know, but it's not working.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'd been trying for probably 18 months at this point, mm-hmm. even with being, you know, flying in from different continents mm-hmm. and all that stuff. We'd been actively trying for at least 18 months and it wasn't happening. And at that point, I'd been, Laura puts her mind to something and she normally gets it. Mm-hmm. So I was like, hang on, A plus B isn't equaling C. And yeah. I can't quite get my head around that I can't control this.
Yeah.
And a much older friend of mine said, welcome to the first parenting lesson, humility. Yes. And it was just brilliant. Yeah. And Imelda as well came out to Los Angeles at one point and we were having lunch and again she was like, oh darling, it's not on your schedule.
Yeah.
It's really not. Yeah. And again, welcome to parenthood.
Yeah. And a great lesson to learn early on, because some people get to, you know, sort of having babies or toddlers and kind of still going, but this doesn't fit and they won't do this and they won't, you know, and you're just like, you know, they won't.
Yeah.
They'll just, yeah.
And maybe, you know, my generation seems to have had children much later than my mother's mm-hmm. generation. Mm-hmm. So we have had this selfish existence for much longer.
Totally.
And it's so, that identity is so familiar that something coming in and breaking that mold, I think, feels much more fractious than if I were 21, yeah. still kind of finding my way, bumbling yeah. along and going, oh, I'm pregnant now. Okay,
I'll do with that. Yeah, 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 exactly.
And there's been much bigger change. And part of me goes, gosh, my job has given me the tools to deal with change brilliantly.
Yeah.
Because hourly, daily, yeah. monthly, it's this is happening, no, it's not, or you're on set today, no, you're not, or actually, can you learn this scene that we're sending you tonight now for tomorrow because weather permitting, we can't shoot yeah. this now? Or,
but also, I think that might be why a lot of my guests on this podcast have kids later, because you're often reacting and juggling with what you're being thrown, you're not actually planning. Mm-hmm. You're not used to sort of going, okay, I'm going to, which is, I think, quite good and healthy, but it also means that you do get to a point where you're in your late 30s and you're like, yeah, I mean, I can, you know, and it's like,
I'm going to have kids.
Yeah, I'm going to have kids at some point. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, well then, when is that point?
Yeah.
And you have to do something active to make that happen.
Yes.
Which means, like, changing the juggling, you know, like you need to drop some balls, basically, as it were.
Yeah.
I think it's a brilliant, you know, if you compare your mindset, for instance, with someone who's a management consultant or a lawyer who works, you know, all hours in an office every day, mm-hmm. and they can't impose that spreadsheet on that baby who isn't sleeping through the night. Mm. I think there's a kind of, you're able to embrace chaos probably more easily.
Yes, although I think both jobs mean letting go of an identity for a while. And what I really valued was when I did then become pregnant, I didn't know whether I wanted to be an actress again. I had that moment of going, speaking to my husband, saying, just so you know, once I have this child, I can't guarantee I'm going to necessarily want to go back and do what I was doing.
Yeah.
I may pop it out and the next day be going, right, no, got to go back
to
work.
Bring it on, yeah.
I just don't know. And I want you and me to be clear that it is okay if I don't do that.
Yeah.
Raza was like, Laura, you're talking to someone who has always got your back. Yeah. I think I needed to say it out loud for myself to go, the identity I've had for a long time might not be what I choose once I become a mother.
And how did that process, because I assume that ebbed and flowed, if that's, you know, that you, what you expect is you have a baby and then you have a very clear idea, I don't want to work again, or I do want to work immediately, you know, like maybe that is clear for some people. For most people, it kind of, there are points in your life you really do want to do that project or do want to work.
Yeah.
And then there are other points where you just want to be with your, you know, and it changes as they grow and all that kind of thing. Is that, how have you navigated that?
When I found out I was pregnant, when I peed on a stick, I thought I was going to be that person dancing around the room going, finally, after 18 months I'm pregnant. The complete opposite happened. I felt my feet on the floor like I'd never felt them before. I felt
stillness within myself that I had only probably felt in meditation or in sleep, or there was this profound kind of gravitational pull. I just felt just grounded.
Yeah.
And I loved being pregnant. It was the most extraordinary time in my life. I felt so well. I've always been healthy. I've always looked after myself, but this was like an inner glow. And this whole feeling that I was a vehicle for life to come through me just blew my mind. Yeah. I felt like I had a higher purpose than what I'd ever had before.
Yeah, yeah.
Other than smelling like a boy's locker room, which was the oddest thing. I remember just going, what is that smell? Like about 16 weeks and going, it's me. And then I think it was at the 21 week, I can't remember where it is, where you have the possibility of finding out through the blood, because both DNA strands show you can find out what you're having.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I wasn't fussed, but Raza really wanted to know. And yeah. I was like, well, if you want to know, then of course I want to know. And I found out I was having a boy, and I was like, of course I'm having a boy. I stink like a boy's locker room.
Maybe I didn't notice. Maybe I always smell like a boy's locker room. I didn't know that was a thing. It must be, yeah.
But also your senses are heightened. So heightened.
So
my smell, like, yeah, it was full on. I just had this wonderful time being pregnant, and I'd done hypnobirthing, a course on hypnobirthing, because I was just intrigued because someone had recommended it. Mm-hmm. So I was really into it. And I was working a little bit, but most of the time I was just really enjoying having this time and feeling this whole kind of journey. And I really felt it. I really gave myself that space and time.
It's the closest I think you ever feel to being, and I mean this in a good way, an animal.
Yes.
Like kind of, you know... What I found fascinating was I'd be sort of, you know, I don't know, talking to you, and then I'd go and read what my embryo was like. It's, you know, that unbeknownst to me, and was something that my brain didn't have to worry about, but my baby was growing fingernails and my body was making this all happen unbeknownst to me while I was putting the wash in the washing machine, or while I was doing all this stuff. And that is just so amazing.
I had a newfound respect for my body. I'd always been grateful for my body, you know, for the way it could, you know, change or achieve goals and stuff. But this was on another level.
Yeah.
And then my waters broke, and that fascinated me. I was like, whoa! But my contractions didn't really come. And 12 hours later, we had to go to hospital because...
And were you in LA?
I was in Los Angeles at the time, which was a whole another thing to navigate because, you know, the medical system there is very different, and I really wanted a water birth, but that was for kind of here and not there. It was all very money orientated, sadly.
Yeah, yeah.
I found a wonderful gynecologist, so I just then wanted to be wherever she was because she was on my wavelength, and that's all that really mattered to me. And with it being your first time, I kind of wanted to be where I knew I could labour, but if God forbid anything were to happen, we'd both be okay.
Yeah.
And 31 hours later, I'd been in...
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. I just let that slide. 31 hour later.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
My contractions, well, this is the genius of hypnobirthing / showed how much it worked.
Yeah.
My contractions would come, and I was on a monitor so my husband could see. And when they came, he would start the hypnobirthing mantras that they'd given us to do.
Yeah.
And they worked because my contractions would slow down.
Really?
And what they were wanting...
You are the first person I've spoken to. Oh, I see. They wanted to
actually... What they were wanting was them to hurry...
Yes, right.
Hurry the frig up. Because he'd been without fluid now for 12 hours. So it was wonderful because I was relaxed.
Yes.
I was dealing with these...
You were in control and all that kind of
dealing with these wonderful contractions in such a zen way. And what we needed was really for the baby to come out.
Whoa, that's so interesting. I've never heard of that. Yeah, that makes
it worked.
Total sense.
My husband can testify because
it
I was obviously in a little,
well, basically.
Yeah. Well, yeah, for
think,
me.
Do you think it worked? Well, because you're the first person I've spoken to for whom hypnobirthing has worked.
Mm.
I think lots of people have said, start the sentence with, of course, I'd done all the hypnobirthing stuff, and then when it happened, that went all out the window.
Right.
I mean, I would say everybody I know has said that. Do you think that your experience of meditation, all that kind of thing, meant you could embrace it more, or...?
Maybe. It had served me so much through kind of that first divorce and dealing with emotions and pain and
it was a language you already were familiar with.
Yeah, and it was almost... I am one of those people that, just like I need to brush my teeth every morning and that's part of my routine, I need to meditate every day.
Yeah, right.
Okay. My mind wants to work in the future and at a gazillion miles an hour, and I miss the present.
Right, yeah.
And there was a real awakening in for me in finding meditation and finding the present moment, which weirdly I was able to do as an actress. When I was playing, I was listening and I was present, but in real life I was 10 steps ahead. And I'm not sure whether that's the insecurity of our industry, I was always kind of planning ahead, or yeah, whether my mind, I just allowed my mind to take over.
Yeah.
So at 31 hours, she said, I think we need to call this now. He was engaged. He just was stuck, I guess, some level. Yeah. And I said, please, can you just give me another hour? And in my delirium, I said, because let's put the music on and I'm going to twerk this baby out. Oh, God knows what was going on with that. And I literally got on the bed and started twerking. I was like...
So this is like 31 hours in, 30 hours in.
Yeah, 31 hours in. She, yeah.
And you were like...
And I was like, please, give me another hour. Because I knew my body, and I was like, if I can just. And she came back probably at like 34 or 35. So then we were in labour. So then
we went.
We were ready to go. So
Oh my God.
Pushed for probably four or five hours.
The twerking basically kickstarted.
I just needed to get up. I needed to get up and get my body going.
Right.
And I'd been moving around throughout, but I don't know, something.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
And by this point, I'm probably remembering a very delirious moment in time as well.
Yeah,
so my husband will probably give you a much better account of this. But I then pushed for probably like 4 or 5 hours every 2 minutes. Like, we were in labour.
Yeah.
He was beyond engaged. He was there. I think my husband could even see his head.
Yeah.
He was just stuck.
Yeah, right.
So that's when, sorry if it's a bit too graphic, but that's when my doctor, rightly so, said, God love you. We need your energy. He needs your energy.
Yeah.
Let's go. Let's call it.
Yeah.
Then the mood totally changed because the lights went on. The surgical team come in.
Yeah.
All ready to prep me into the OR. And the most brilliant moment of that day I remember, other than getting my child, was when the nurse went, hey, doctor, how are you? To my husband. And my husband went, oh, sorry, do we know each other? And she said, aren't you a doctor here? And he said, no, this is my wife. And she went, oh, I'm so sorry. And then I got taken into the OR and they had to sterilise me before Raza was allowed in the room. And as they're putting like the orange iodine or whatever it is they have to put on me, the woman turns around to me and goes, oh my gosh, your husband's a doctor on TV, isn't he? And I was like, yep, pass the scalpel, Raza. And she just had this moment of like redness. Yes.
It could have gone horribly wrong.
Well, he was there, though. Yeah. I was like, I've got my TV doctor. Should I need anyone?
I've got a doctor, a TV doctor.
Yeah. He's like, Lara, be quiet. Be quiet. In your delirium, be quiet. And thankfully, you know, we ended up having, via caesarean, a healthy baby boy. So,
pretty good.
Yeah, life was good.
Hello? Is it a microphone?
I'd had a caesarean and I got home and it was pilot season. And my team had said, do you want us to call or do you not? And I said, oh, I don't know. If something comes across your desk that you go, I have to call you for, then yeah, call me and I'll just say yay or nay if that's okay.
Yeah.
And I'd auditioned whilst pregnant for a new Marvel TV series. And I don't know whether it had been pushed or what had happened, but 2 weeks after having Oz, they called and said, so they think you're the one and just want you to come and do a chemistry test for the network. And
2 weeks.
Yeah, two weeks. Okay. And it's going to shoot in Hawaii. You'll be out there for 4 months. They need to shave your head because it's to play Medusa, and they need to CGI the hair on. But they can't show you any of the scripts. And you know, I have that moment of going, okay, Hawaii. Shave my hair. Can't see what I'm signing up for. But because I was kind of in this euphoric new mother place,
yeah,
I was like, what do you think, Ross? And he was like, what do I think? Honey, you're... Marvel stuff's really active. You've had a cesarean.
Yeah.
You can't do that stuff. So they need to have a stunt double doing all that stuff for you.
Yeah.
You know what 16, 18-hour days are on set. You're a new mum. Yeah. You're breastfeeding your child.
Yeah.
Do you think this is
I'll
the right...
I'll throw that one back to you.
And I was like... And I remember them saying, and what would you need to make this happen? And, you know, a wonderful chap at Marvel, what would you need? And I thought, I don't know.
I don't know, because I'm two weeks in. How can I possibly know?
And I don't know the answer to those questions. I remember WhatsApping Olivia Colman, a very dear friend of mine, who I knew had worked with one child early on and not so much with the other one, going, what did you need?
Yeah.
And thinking, I don't know, do I need a microwave? Do I need a bottle warmer? My brain couldn't even begin to comprehend
also,
that stuff.
Also, at that point, 2 weeks in, you're not in any kind of routine or anything like that. It's all a little bit like seat of your pants, isn't it?
Yeah.
So no one could answer that question, presumably.
Well, I certainly couldn't. And I know other people that my agents work with have gone back very early. And I was just like, I'm not in this place.
But also, most of those people don't have to make that decision right then and there. It's usually, so the people I know who've done it knew that
the job was coming after the baby.
Yeah, it was coming after the baby. So then they found themselves in that situation and went, holy shit, this is full on. But it was, the decision was made and it was a done deal. So to make that decision then was quite hard, I think. And also, what a lot of people talk about is that how you imagine it when you watch films is that the moment your child is born, you become a mother and you act and feel like a mother. And actually, in my experience, it takes a while
absolutely
to kind of work out who you are in that space.
Yeah.
So actually, you asking Raza that question makes total sense to me, because you're kind of going, what do I do? Because the old me would go, yeah, great, let's do it.
And you fall into the familiar.
Yeah.
So that
and you're still the old you, because you've only just had a baby.
Of course you are.
Yeah.
And over that month, I think I got offered 7 jobs.
Right.
Which was extraordinary. And I remember one of them, they were like, will you just come in and meet the casting director and the director? And I was like, yeah, sure, because it was familiar. It was familiar for me to
exactly
do that.
Yeah.
And even the logistics of, well, hang on, I'm breastfeeding every 2 hours. This was my husband saying this to me, by the way.
Yeah.
Hang on, you're breastfeeding every 2 hours. So if you go to this meeting, we need to come with you.
Yeah,
you need to feed before you go in. You need to feed when you come out.
Yeah,
like, God love him, was on top of all of that stuff.
Yeah.
He's like, do you want to do this? And I was like, I think I do want to do this one, actually.
Yeah.
So I went in, came out, was breastfeeding in the car. And then my team called me and said, oh, just so you know, that meeting was your test. And in the States, once you test, you're signing up for a 7-year option of something. So they were asking me, are you okay with that being your test?
Whoa.
And them submitting. Now, look. Out of all of those 7 pilots, I don't think one of them actually went to series.
Right.
I'm not sure even if, you know, who knows what. I know definitely none of them went to series. And I'm not saying that to make myself feel better for not doing the jobs. But I'm just saying that in the perspective of, was it worth me, you know, should I have gone to do them? Should I have said, yes, I want them to test?
Yeah.
I did what I felt was right at that moment, which was to say, no thank you.
Yeah.
Really appreciative, but at this moment in time, no thank you. I'm a new mum.
Yeah.
But there was definitely a pull of, am I doing the right thing? And it's only in hindsight I can say...
You can kind of go, actually...
Of course it was the right thing. Yeah. It was the most magical time
even
for
us. If they had gone to series and had been amazing,
what would have
whatever,
that have been?
You know, what would that have meant in terms of your kind of motherhood and relationship with your son and all that kind of thing? So whatever happened was right.
And then in the end... I had this magical period of time being at home, being a mum. And because we were 5,000 miles away from our home in Los Angeles and from our family, we kind of decided that we just wanted the first 3 weeks together, the three of us, just to figure out what the hell we were doing in amongst this new... And also to have that time together as a married couple, going, gosh, we've got this wonderful new child, have this... the time alone so that one of us could take the baby and the other one could just rest or be or whatever that person needed to do.
It's so, so lovely, that time. It's so
it's precious.
Precious and lovely.
Having baths with your new baby, you know, laying in bed for just hours upon hours, not knowing what the time is.
And that doesn't matter.
Phone on silent, not being contactable. So we did that and then slowly people came to visit us and it was just wonderful. And then a job again that I'd auditioned for whilst I was pregnant came back around. And it was a mini-series for the BBC filming in Manchester and Liverpool. And it was about an 8 or 9 week shoot. And I just said to Raza, could we do this one? Could we make this one? It felt right to be coming home to the UK, to be coming home to a support unit. The director's partner at the time was pregnant, so I knew he knew what that journey was ahead of, hopefully, for him and what it was for me. David Morrissey, who I was playing opposite, was a father. And we just kind of navigated this new...
It was brilliant.
The City in the City.
Yes.
Yeah, it was this crazy world. And
really
it was
great.
It was interesting. Also, the show was not on my shoulders. David was virtually in every scene. I didn't have that responsibility, which felt really nice.
So you could enjoy...
Come in, honour being at work, enjoy it.
Perfect kind of...
The second the cameras were turning around, Lara would disappear to express or feed or, you know, whatever that was. And they were so accommodating. Mammoth were the producers for the BBC and they were just so accommodating, so brilliant. The tricky part for me was there was an occasion we were filming kind of till 2-3 in the morning and then I'd come home. Oz would wake up to be fed at 6 and the day would begin. But they'd even scheduled it so that I occasionally I was in consecutive days, but not very often.
Right.
So I knew I'd come in and then I would
down.
Have the next day.
Yeah.
Kind of just being mum, sleeping when he was sleeping.
Yeah. Is there anything you would like to have known before having your baby? Or that you would, any advice you would give someone who was just about to have a baby?
I think I would have liked to have known that miscarriages were more common than I'd known.
Yeah, definitely.
Because the second I told friends, oh, actually, I miscarried, everyone, virtually everyone has said, oh yeah, I miscarried in between 1 and 2. Or a dear friend of mine, 3 miscarriages, 3 healthy children. One, I guess, they're private moments for people, but also it's that, I always come back to the red tent book that I've not read in years, that kind of community of going, we're all going through this.
Yeah.
And to separate ourselves
extraordinary,
is kind of unhelpful. And it's almost like you feel like you want to just have time for yourself and separate. But actually, it's when I've needed to connect the most.
Yeah.
It's when you've needed that community, especially of women, to have your back. And just, you don't need them in your face, but you need them there just to go, I know, yeah, I've been there. And I called my friend who had had the 3 miscarriages and 3 healthy girls. And I just called her because I knew she knew what I was going through.
Mm.
And she was going, I don't even know what to say to you. And I was like, I'm actually not calling for you to say anything to me. I just... No, you know what this is.
And yeah.
Because there's nothing I can do. If it was within my control, I would be doing that. It just,
you know, I know, thank you for being on the end of the phone. Or it was actually FaceTime because she was in LA, but thank you for being on, you know, the end of the phone. Just giving me your time in that way was all I needed. So I guess it's not what I'd say to be not being scared about sharing our life experiences as women, as mothers, as parents, because it's not easy. I was also at a dinner party the other day with a friend, two kids under two, and I could see behind her eyes she was drowning a little bit. And she's this beautiful, beautiful woman. And for a week I sat on, should I call her and say, I know that something's going on with you right now. Should I? Shouldn't I?
Yeah, yeah.
And then eventually I sent her this really long, garbled WhatsApp voice audio message because I didn't want to be like in her face or in her shit. But at the same time, I kind of wanted to go, I know you're not okay, and it's staying with me that I know you're not okay, and I'm not trying to fix it, but I want you to know that if you do need someone, I know things. And she was like, oh, thank you. I actually, if I'm honest, I am drowning right now.
Yeah.
And to just have each other's backs in that way, because sometimes, especially within my work environment, you turn up and a girl is looking you up and down, what you're wearing, and you know they're only looking at you through their own insecurity of, oh shit, I've dressed like this today, or oh, she looks really good in that, or she's put on weight, you know, all that judgment. Mm-hmm. Where's the community of women building each other up, you know? I think we're on the precipice of that. Mm. I think we probably were that, and we've come far away from it, and we've got to get back to it.
Yeah.
But being back here in the UK, being home, mother, sister, mother-in-law, sister-in-law, girlfriends, we're in it. Like, we're in it together. And it's so joyous when my girlfriend was having her daughter's third birthday party, and I was like, do you want me to bring the chili over so you can do the balloons and everything else? Or you know, whatever. Let's get in amongst it together and stop pretending
that we're all these little separate little...
Or that we're superwomen when we achieve the day by ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you say, why? It's so much more enjoyable to go, oh my gosh, she's thrown up on me again.
Yeah.
Can you get me a t-shirt or get me a cloth?
Yeah.
Or when a friend takes the initiative to go and change a friend's nappy.
Yeah, yeah.
And
friend's child's nappy.
Thank you. Not my nappy.
Well, my nappy's always needs changing.
to have that support unit... Yeah. It's just joyous, and then you laugh more and enjoy more, and you've got those memories.
Yeah, you're connected.
Do you remember
when?
Yes. Rather than phoning 3 months later going, gosh, I had an awful time. I'll give you a prime, honest example right now. I felt stupid for telling a few friends that I was pregnant because I've just miscarried.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, man, just as I told a few friends that we were 6 weeks pregnant, I miscarry. And then my husband and I looked at each other knowing those people that we told, those few, we'd want them in the trenches with us regardless. Because not only were they sending us love all the way through us wanting to try and have another child, they are there with us going,
no matter what.
Today's not a great day, is it? No.
Yeah.
No matter what. And that is everything for me, because I do not want to be 90 on that rocking chair alone. I want to have those memories, those people, that history, that community, those kids around us. That's living for me more than being on any film set, more than being having any experience of even, you know, all of that makes you who you are, of course. And I love my job and I wouldn't want to do anything else. But this is expansive on a different level.
Thank you so much to Lara Pulver for coming in and talking to me and being so open and candid about a very thorny subject. So great love and appreciation to her for coming in to talk to me. Next week we are talking to I am talking to Danny Robbins, the comedian and writer and broadcaster. He talks about being a dad and what that means and how there are lots of bad dad examples. It's quite interesting about that. I'm quite funny about that. And also, I'm applying for some funding to focus specifically on the health aspects of parenting. And I was wondering whether you had any opinion on this. I think maybe it would be good to dedicate some more episodes on miscarriage, maybe postnatal depression, breastfeeding. What interests you? What do you think we should shine a light on? And any input from you would be brilliant. You can contact me via Twitter at Sophie_Black or at Trapdoor Podcast. And it would be great to hear your thoughts. As always, liking, subscribing, rating, all that malarkey is hugely, hugely helpful if in any way you enjoy this podcast, as it bumps it up the ladder so other people can listen to it. And until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you in a few weeks.
Bye-bye.